Welcome to As the Wheel of Time Turns, where we unravel the weavings of Amazon's Wheel of Time. We are doing a review pod of the third episode of Amazon Prime's Wheel of Time TV series. I am BJ. I am Nibliss. I am joined by some of my chosen cohorts. Let's start with Lee. How are you doing?
Hey, doing well. Happy to be here.
Sarah?
Also doing well. Excited to talk about this episode.
And since this is an audio format, you can't see that Sarah is wearing a lovely getup, very much looking like a tanker. And we are finally joined by Brie.
Hi.
Who is also looking lovely with a very Nynaeve-esque braid and some Two Rivers clothing, we would say?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much a shawl and, you know, has the whole dress going. All sorts of things.
I was going to dress really like Matt, but it was a little cold. a little cold, needed a new jacket.
A little chilly.
Yeah. Didn't have the fur-lined leather coat that you really wanted, and, you know, we'll just figure out what we're going to do. So we have some segments that we go through. We first are going to start off with a recap that is done by Lee. Then we have Tavern of the Week that is hosted by Bray. She is the decider on that one. Then we're doing Gleeman's Corner, where we look at dialogue and scenes that were our favorite of the week. And then lastly, we throw it back to Lee with Novice's Notes and Dragon Power Rankings, since we don't know who the Dragon Reborn is.
Who is the Dragon Reborn?
Or the King of the North, or any of those other things, if you listen to our other pods, Lee, I hear we have other content that they can check out.
That's right. It's the Mangum Talks podcast. We have a number of podcasts we do. A lot of TV review podcasts. We have a couple general interest podcasts. So just go to your favorite podcast platform, probably the one you're listening to now. Type in Mangum Talks. That's M-A-N-G-U-M Talks. You can also go to mangumtalks.com. Good times. Are we ready for the recap?
I think we are.
Woo! All right, let's do the recap. It's Wheel of Time, Episode 3, A Place of Safety. Which is like, stands in contrast to the last episode, right? They literally went to like one of the unsafest places in this known world.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, that we know of.
Right. But, so, well, yes.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
One thing I like to note is what they include on their recap of the previous episode. I always think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in their recap of the previous episode, there's a huge emphasis on the dragon. This concept, the lore of the dragon. They really want you to know this idea of there's the dragon reborn. Here's the backstory. I get the sense that that's like absolutely imperative that people understand that, because they're not going to understand the motivations of the characters or what people are doing without it. So they really had a heavy emphasis on this idea of the dragon reborn and the one power. Also Moraine's injury and the fact that she's getting weak. They sort of ended the recap with that.
Mm-hmm.
So then we jump to the episode. We start with a flashback of Nynaeve getting taken by one of the Trollocs. So this is a flashback, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
She's unconscious and gets dropped. This is a strange fucking scene. These Trollocs, man. I don't know if you get more information about them in the books, but they are weird. So what happens is the Trolloc that brings Nynaeve in, totally fine Trolloc. I would say 100% Trolloc.
Yep.
Then we have the other one, seems in the 60% range, seems very injured, this Trolloc. And is like up against a wall, hurting.
Yes.
And the other, the Trolloc that had Nynaeve seems to walk over like, I'm thinking he's going to help him. And instead, disembowels him and starts eating him right there. So a couple things we pick up about the Trollocs. One is, do not mind killing each other. Not a healer, I guess. And then two is, they're cannibals. They will eat each other.
Yep.
Yes.
A lot of like blood in the water, shark turning on each other, stuff like that.
That's pretty classic Trolloc.
Battles are hard. Need a snack.
Okay.
Gotta keep up the energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And no time for the weak, apparently, in the Trolloc army.
No.
And apparently people to spare. Like, if I was one of these Eyeless, I'd be a little concerned. I'd be like, how about y'all don't kill each other? Y'all are like my army. A little concerning. But then we see Nynaeve. She wakes up. She takes off. Starts running.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to note about when she's running that I thought was very smart. I don't know if she meant to do this or not. When she's going down a very steep hill, she rolls. I'm just going to say for anybody out there getting chased, just a little general feedback. If you're getting chased and you're going down a steep hill, try the roll. I mean, you save some energy, and she seemed to speed up a little bit.
Yeah. I do think she actually hit a rock and did a trip. But
well, there you go. It was
okay
fortuitous, I would say. But I think it's a good move, right? She seemed to save a little energy. She eventually gets to a cave. This, I think, is the same cave we saw before.
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that Moraine came and talked to her in, and she gets into the water. And the way she gets into the water, she's able to sort of hide a little bit from the Trollocs, but she's not completely, like, invisible, right? It just depends on the angle the Trolloc's at, to if he's going to see her or not. And Trolloc starts looking around. I guess he can sense or smell or just guesses that she's in the pool, so he gets down in the pool. So this is more evidence that the problem that Trollocs have is with deep water, not water itself. Mm-hmm. They can get in water. They just can't swim.
Yeah.
So he gets in there and he starts jamming around like he's, you know, gouging for trout or something. He's just banging back and forth. And our girl Nynaeve, really cool scene. Head kind of slowly comes up through the water. You see her hair and she's to the back of the Trolloc, thank goodness. And then she disarms the Trolloc, takes the knife, dagger, kills him right there in the pool. And we see the blood run in the pool, which I thought was pretty cool. We see her get out of the water, flips her hair back, woo, badass music. And then we're done with the cold opening.
Yes. So one question and then one comment. The question is, how do you feel about Nynaeve's running? Because we already had, you know, Perrin was an awkward runner. Is Nynaeve a good runner? Or you know, how's the form here?
Yeah, very good point. So Perrin, later in this episode, keeps his hand down when he walks fast. He does this. This guy, the character, yeah. His hand keeps down. But the question is about Nynaeve. I think she's a good sprinter. I would not use that form for long distance running. A lot of wasted movement in the upper body.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my take.
So the comment is, I don't know if you noticed that there was a pattern to the blood in the pool, and this is a repeated
motif. Is it the dragon tooth thing?
Yeah.
Sure is.
It's the dragon's fang, so it's the other... So it made the symbol of the Aes Sedai, so on one side is sort of the flame, it's a yin-yang, and so the blood formed the dragon's
tooth. Now, Bree, you knew to look for that, presumably, right?
Yeah,
But did you notice it on the first viewing?
Yes.
Okay, did you?
No.
Okay, I didn't either. All right, but it's now something I'll look for sure. Because yeah. I know the shape now, and all of a, you know, casual viewers should know it too, because they really focused in on that the livestock, the deer,
yes,
that were killed,
yep,
that we saw that the Trollocs had clearly done. Yeah. And that is the shape BJ's talking about. So
yeah,
what that is, look for that, I guess.
Yeah, so it's a yin-yang shape. Sometimes they'll have only one side, sometimes they'll have only the other. In the books, and it's... the flame side, the white side with the tip pointing up is sort of a little bit more associated with Aes Sedai, also associated with good, as opposed to the black side, the dark side associated with the dragon, associated with evil. And we do get a little bit of this, that since the dragon broke the world, he's sort of considered evil. And then we're getting a little bit of the dichotomy of not so much evil as opposing the dark one, and sometimes bad things happen.
Right. And I think that if you, from what we can tell in these first three episodes, the general population is quite confused about who's good and who's bad in this deal.
Yeah.
Which seems reasonable.
Get a lot more of that
later
on. But this is high fantasy, so symbols are very important. So I would say look for that going forward. One of the things I like to do in all my review podcasts that have a cold opening is to time the cold opening. So this started at about 1:40, went to 5. So the cold opening here is about 3 minutes and 20 seconds that we got.
It felt long.
Yeah, 3 minutes and 20 seconds is pretty long for a cold opening for a show. I'm going to continue to track that to just kind of see how that goes.
Go
for it.
I was just going to say, there was one thing that I wanted to highlight about this cold opening that I really, really liked that they did. We have seen a lot of Trollocs in the first two episodes, but it has frequently been kind of en masse or in the dark and in, like, frenzied situations. But... what this cold opening allowed for when they got into the pool, into the sacred pool area, was you had a more lit Trolloc, individual, not moving around so much. So you actually got like a real sense of what these guys are.
What they look like, yeah.
What they look like, how big they are, specifically and individually. That felt purposeful to me because we've gotten like just kind of big groups of them before.
So one of the things that I wanted to point out there is, I don't know if you noticed, but the Trolloc has blue eyes, and they're very human-looking.
I did not notice
And
that.
I think they, on purpose, used someone that had blue eyes for that, because that's something that is supposed to be a feature of Trollocs, that they have features from different species, including humans.
And that's a very human feature.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is that Nynaeve, when she comes out of the water... It reminded me of like Jurassic Park, like the like a dinosaur raising, you know, from the
absolutely.
Water.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's a hunter.
I had very like Medusa vibes from
her there,
because she has the multiple braids too at some points and like
Well, they were obviously going for sort of like she's a badass thing, because she does the braid flip and then she gets the powerful music in the background at the end of it, right?
Yeah.
So quick question. Did you time the other two episodes? Do you remember about?
Well, the first one there was no
right. There was
nothing, and this was longer than the first one. I think the first one was in the 2-minute and 20-30 second range, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So we cut back to the show. Cut back to Nynaeve with a blade over Lan's throat. I said at the end of the last episode, I didn't think this was a bright move from Nynaeve.
Mm-hmm.
This bears out. She asks where her friends are, and Lan says, "How did you find me?" She asks what he did to them. Lan, quote, "You think you know this world. You know nothing. The Dark One is coming for your friends, and Moraine has fought its forces with everything she has." So, I mean, he will fight for Moraine, and if he's got to do a little PR battle, we'll do that too. Nynaeve asks if she cares about the kids so much. Nynaeve asks if she, Moraine, cares about the kids so much, why did she leave them? Lan says, "She didn't. I did." If you can't notice, completely unconscious, vegetative state right here.
She's not going anywhere on her own power.
Nynaeve doesn't seem to know what to do with that. Lan says she can't move, let alone find them in her condition. You, Nynaeve, are a healer. She's like, "You think I'm going to help her?" He said, "You will if you want to find your friends." Lan then walks directly to the dagger and presses it against his throat. See this a lot in media. Never seen a person do it in real life, though, I'll tell you. Open blade, just walk up to it and let it like hit the chest and keeps kind of daring the person to do something. Then we have this quote, "We both know that you won't do it." This really seems to piss Nynaeve off. So she does. She lunges, like she takes a swipe at him. And of course, Lan completely flips her around, no problem. Says, "You tried to kill me." Disarms her, clocks her in the back of the head. It's good night, Nynaeve. I'll say this. You have something.
She bit him.
Yeah, she bit him.
Yeah, so it was more than like he immediately clocks her, because she's still struggling after like he's disarmed her and like has her in a headlock, and it's just like, all right, well, if you're going to keep biting.
Yeah, no, there's a specific moment where he loses patience and just I'm done with this interaction.
I think we need to be like, I always think I need to be careful about this. Like, I'm not trying to like infantilize the woman in this situation, right? But there was vibes of like little kids settle down. And I think that's not necessarily because of Nynaeve, because we've seen that she can hold her own.
Yeah.
It's to show how powerful Lan is.
Right.
Like
yes.
when she put the blade to his throat, I am fairly certain from what I've seen on screen that he could have disarmed her then. But he does not view her as an enemy. He views her as a very confused ally. And so here's my question to the group. Like, would it have just been better for Nynaeve to just say, "Hey, Nynaeve over here, sorry, just didn't want to scare you. Hey, I'm alive. Know where my friends are?" Sarah, what do you think would have gone, how do you think Lan would have reacted to that? Would it have been better than whatever poor shit she concocted in this situation?
I mean, I think that the answer to that has to be yes, because this did not end well for her. And as we have talked about, it was never going to end well for her. However, I don't think that we have any evidence that Nynaeve as a character has that gear of, let's sit down and talk about this in a reasonable way. I mean, she screamed a goddamn Trolloc, so.
Yeah, I think I called it like unbridled or unreserved anger last episode. So it's just constant, just rage.
Yeah.
So I will say that there are things in the books where her abilities are impressive to Lan and other people, and especially like
it's about to be impressive.
And so they have some of this conversation a little bit later, and so I think that they wanted to keep that through line in the TV show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a key scene in the books. It doesn't play out exactly like this, but the fact that Nynaeve shows up and she essentially surprises Lan is a huge deal in the books. And so keeping that in, I think, is key.
Yeah, I agree. I think that for Lan, he's not used to being tracked. And so the fact that she tracked him was immediately impressive to him. And that was pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know that she necessarily, even to get that surprise and reaction, I don't know that she necessarily had to go hold a knife to his throat.
But also, this is 100% Nynaeve, like, to be like, all right, what can I do? Immediate aggression.
Yes. Yeah. I don't trust you. I don't like you. You have something I want.
I'm going to go
Picasso. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We cut. So in other podcasts that I do on the Mangum Talks podcast network, I do review shows with my co-host Spencer, who is not on this podcast. Spencer likes to teach me internet phrases because I'm not on the internet all day like Spencer. I just like, I got a life and stuff. And he taught me the phrase shipping. This means you relationship someone by like willing it into existence through the internet and Reddit. I'm shipping Egwene and Perrin. I'm just going to go ahead and say it right now. That's
it. You're shipping them.
I'm shipping them. Absolutely.
You like this pair.
I like it. Absolutely. 100%. I like it way better than Egwene. and Rand, sick of that already. Two episodes in, tired of those two.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
What?
Are you really shipping Egwene and Perrin, or are you just shipping Egwene with anyone other than Rand?
No, I mean, well, there's a little bit of both, right? Because I'm obviously sick of Egwene and Rand.
Okay.
I think we all should be. I think this should be something that we can all agree on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some, like, really kind,
yes,
good, wholesome scenes between these two, which,
yes,
we're about to get into.
So are you clarifying, Sarah, that if Egwene was in the woods with Matt,
mm-hmm,
would you be down with this?
Probably not. I mean, I would, if there was a hint of it, I would probably, mm-hmm, root for it. I'm not quite sure I would lead with, I'm shipping these two the way I'm doing
fair
with Perrin.
Okay.
Like,
fair enough.
I just,
okay,
think that there's some vibes here.
Perrin,
there's,
yes,
some serious,
quickly,
vibes.
You know, just, you know, get through the stages of grief. You know, when you split, you've had an episode.
This happens all the time. People lose a spouse and start dating quickly right afterwards.
All right.
Shut up. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Rebound girl.
Yeah, they, well, you know, I don't want to diminish what they have. And then they seem to be in some sort of like plain or like frozen. It's not really a tundra, but people would maybe call it like a frozen,
yeah,
tundra.
A lot
thing
of wind coming through.
Yeah,
it's very cold, and they hear the wolves. If you didn't listen to the last episode, I debuted a theory that the wolves are not bad. They might be. That's just my theory. They're not bad. Egwene is concerned that the wolves are following them. They come upon some brush that they can hide behind, and Matt, or not Matt Perrin, absolutely trying to light that fire. Just got a stone and a knife, and he is going so hard he's literally cutting himself trying to get this thing lit, because I guess multiple reasons, right? One, they're fucking cold, but two, they're trying to scare off the wolves, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Egwene, trooper that she is, a little hand magic, whoop, whoop, starts the fire. He finally looks at her and he's like, was that me or you? If you wouldn't mind channeling us some food or water. So I like this. I like the line because he acknowledges that it was her. But he doesn't seem like offended by it. He's like, mm-hmm, he like makes a joke about it. So I thought that was pretty cool. It does seem like the fire is helping them in their spirits, though. Perrin asks her if she thinks the others are all right. And Egwene says she doesn't know. But she knows where Rand will go. He'll go home. Perrin's like, they can't go home, first off. But they won't go home either. And Egwene, how do you know that? And Perrin goes, well, because I know Rand. And he'll go where he thinks you're going. And this seems to lift the spirits of Egwene a little, mm-hmm, bit. Perrin tells her he'll keep watch, but come on over, a little snuggle party. We got to keep warm and get some rest. Now, I am shipping these two. I make nothing of this snuggle here.
No.
I mean, it's just two cold people. I mean,
yeah,
any human beings would do the same thing.
Yes.
I don't think we're meant to read anything romantic into that yet.
All right.
We'll get there.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Cut to Nynaeve, who is now tied to a tree with her mouth covered. So, didn't work out super great for her.
I mean, or did it?
I don't know. But she's tied to a tree and she's got her mouth gagged right now. We see Moraine and she is out of it and pale. And
yeah,
and they do a really good job.
Rough.
She looks real rough. And they do a good job of showing her long enough that you can see the shallow breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really
awesome. Are you watching the subtitles?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it does have that in the subtitles.
It's a shallow
like
breathing.
Labeled breathing and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Lan comes up to Nynaeve, takes her mouth cover off and gives her some water. I'll tell you what I don't. Let me pause here. I got another little thing I want to talk about. There's something I don't like about Lan. All right, love the character.
Your guy.
Yeah, my guy. Absolutely. How can you not like Lan? But he's of Asian descent, the actor, and they made him look like a fucking samurai. Like, I think this is going to confuse a lot of people. I can't. It doesn't seem to me to be like, in this world, he is of some sort of like samurai. Like, I don't think they're going for that, right? I think that's a different thing. Like, they're not like playing on a samurai trope here, from what I can tell. Maybe they do, but from what I can tell, they're not doing that. But yet he looks like right out of a Bruce Lee movie. So it's the costuming that I'm like, they maybe could have done better with that.
So I think they are, and I think you'll see that. And I think because you either didn't watch the trailers or don't remember, like, there is a whole group of people that have this look that you saw in one of the teaser or trailers. And I think we will get there before the season ends.
I don't think I watched a trailer. I think I took acid. I think I had some sort of weird vision.
Some sort of trip.
That trailer was nonsensical. Now, the second, the one that we released right up before it was close.
Yeah. So I think it was in the teaser, and it was, like, one of the, like, second and a half, like, flashes that you get. So, like, I'm not saying that you should remember it, but, like,
it was there. So what I'm hearing from
you all, it was also in the trailer. There was a section.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember that. But one thing, so what I'm hearing from you all is it's not necessarily bad to equate that with the sort of samurai type thing.
Correct.
Not at all. Okay. This was an intentional choice. His hair is an intentional choice. And
his little band around his head is intentional. So all of that, it all fits with a certain nation in this world.
It just, because he was the actor's of Asian descent, I thought it was hokey. But if it's okay to make that connection, I'm cool with it.
I mean, we'll see what they do with it.
Yeah.
Yep. Nynaeve says, if I help her, she best give me the answers I want. Very funny when I'm watching this. I paused it to write my notes to get Nynaeve's quote down. And I said, I don't think she should be making any demands. Very next quote from Lan, are you really in a position to be making demands? Nynaeve, it's not a demand, it's a threat. She's going to die without treatment. You know that. I don't see another wisdom around here, do you? Cut to Nynaeve going through the forest, picking up flowers from the woods. So it's very clear that her healing is very different than the healing that Moraine does.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lan watches her work, which she takes issue with. Do you really need to be watching me? She's mad all the time. Nynaeve, you want to ask, so just ask. Lan says, you tracked me all the way from Two Rivers to Shadar Lugolf. How'd you do that? How did you track me? This is clearly stuck in his craw. He's not used to this. Mm-hmm. He covers his tracks. This is strange to him. Nynaeve, I said you could ask, not that I'd answer. Now, I will say this. I think Nynaeve should just throw a lot in with this crew and just let the guard down. But if you're not going to do that, then withholding a little bit of that IP that you have, probably smart, right? Yeah. Like, she's got a little bit of something that he doesn't have, or at least doesn't know about. So it's probably smart for her in her current mindset to reserve that.
I would also point out this. It struck me on the second watch, I think, although it was kind of niggling at me earlier. Nynaeve, in the course of between escaping, killing the Trolloc and escaping, and the super important, all-important thing that she has to do, track Lan and find her friends, costume change?
Okay, so I am so glad you brought this up.
She's totally wearing something different and clean.
Yes, okay. Not only that, but her hair is completely redone.
Yes, it is.
And like, well
yes,
done. Not just, I redid it in the, you know, rush that everything happened. And she went back and got a horse, like all of that stuff.
Let's assume the best about the show, and let's assume it's intentional. Then in world canon, are we meant to believe that the Trollocs just sort of, when the four left, the Trollocs just sort of left Two Rivers and she was able to go back into her home?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I think that is
and
accurate.
It's days later. So it's not like, you know, we're just assuming that for like a week or two she's been traveling the same thing in Grungy. I mean, if...
She's not Matt, for God's sakes.
Right, exactly. She's not Matt. And so I think like it would be reasonable canon that she went back, and I bet if you're right, she might even confirm that the Trollocs didn't go back to the Two Rivers or left the Two Rivers shortly after they left.
That might be a way for her to confirm it, right? Like, obviously I went back in my home. I got this fresh Carhartt on. It's really solid.
Yeah.
New Tims. I'm looking good.
I think that there is an explanation for why this would have happened. I just think that like the urgency that Nynaeve has been like
approaching
to function with would have been more believable if she had left immediately with just a horse from Two Rivers as soon as she found out that her friends were gone.
Right.
Not stop, redo the hair, take a bath.
I mean, you can take a bath at some point.
Like, I think it's just more evidence.
But those,
those
braids are fairly intricate, and even somebody that is an experienced braider, like, that's going to take some time.
And I would also, this is also a little bit of a larger issue I take with how they are portraying these characters as they are traveling. They're all too clean. Like, by the time we get to where we are, they are all too
You're
clean for what
have,
they...
Yeah,
yeah.
It, and it's sort of like...
That's going to be
but
a
But she is
issue.
Real fresh at this point.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's like, well, okay.
I feel like... So, first of all, that's a good point, and I didn't even notice that she had changed. But I think, like, maybe what we can take from this is that this urgency that Nynaeve is talking with, like... Let's take Nynaeve and let's like put her like in our world. Like if she was at a drive-thru line, she'd be like, you're gonna give me a fucking Big Mac and you're gonna give it to me now. Like everything is like, I think like you're saying she like you're,
this is
you're
just
saying
her tone.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's all the time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's always hers. You want something, she wants it now. God damn it, it's the most important thing in the world.
And so I think that there are some parallels between her and Moraine. Moraine is
softer in
this, mm-hmm. but very much a you're not a woman that hears no very often.
Yeah,
I am not.
Yeah.
And so the other thing I wanted to say about the quote that you had about her is I feel like it softens a little bit of her anger with humor. And it wasn't just a
The I said you could ask, not that I'd answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because she had like a little bit of a smile or a smirk.
Yes. She was.
And so it is humor, and it does gentle it a little bit.
Well, she's probably impressed if she ever laser cars in, which she won't do, but if she would, she's probably a little bit impressed that like Lan disarms her, doesn't hurt her, and his only interest is getting Moraine fixed.
Right.
Like he just wants to help her. It's clear. That's his only, like that's kind of an impressive thing, I would think, if you're coming at it from a good place, right? Cuts to Nynaeve treating Moraine. She's basically what she's doing is creating a salve, what I can tell, to pack the wound to help the infection. It seems like more of a medicinal approach as opposed to a magical approach is what I'm getting.
Right.
Nynaeve turns to Lan. I've heard about the bond between an Aes Sedai and her warder. More on that, I'm going to ask some canon questions here. That you can feel what she feels.
Hmm?
Well, get ready because this is going to hurt. I'm going to give you my take of what I saw on the screen, and I'm going to ask if this is something you want to disabuse me of with book canon or if we just let it run. It seems to me that there is the lore out there that the warder and the Aes Sedai are very close. They basically can feel each other. It's pretty clear that Lan cannot feel what she's feeling, like literally. I think it's just a saying that she sort of appropriated and sort of just thought. Like she's like, she heard that and she's like, well, maybe that there's some truth to that, so I'll go ahead and warn him. But when Nynaeve packs Moraine's wound and like gets the pus out of it, looks like it's something that might hurt. Lan doesn't seem like he's really hurting, so.
There's a joke that Lan is stone face, so I wouldn't take Lan's reactions to things as normal in the world.
Particularly pain.
Do we think, so there is, so, okay, all right.
We'll have to see what the show does.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the book lore, which is different. And so there are a lot of things that they're diverging on, and
I'm nervous sure that they're diverging so much so soon. This makes me nervous. Book people, it might not make you as nervous as it makes me, but like I keep hearing from you all, like I'm like, well, maybe the book answers this, and y'all are like, well, fuck, I don't know.
Well,
and I mean, that's kind of a bad sign. Three episodes.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, is that essentially a lot of the changes that they've done? Yes, they are big changes, and I think that's where a number of people are kind of upset about them. However, in the grand scheme of things, what they've changed means that they're trying to keep true to the soul and the heart of the books and the characters. And I think they're doing that reasonably well. So I think even though, yes, there are changes, it's not changes that are going to like functionally alter the span of the books and the arc that everybody goes through.
Okay.
And the other
necessary changes to facilitate the movement of the plot.
Right. Because there's a lot of internalized stuff that you're just not going to see on screen, or it's going to look terrible.
Okay. Makes
right.
sense.
And so a lot of the intricacies like that, and what you're talking about is either somebody's point of view where, you know, oh, like I felt that, or I saw that, or whatever else. And we're just either the actor or actress is going to like show that like on their face or with
just
a reaction, or they're not.
Right.
And so it's hard to tell now, like some of those things, like where they're going with it.
Yeah.
I think it'll be more clear as they go on, because they're going to have to show all those things rather than have that point of view.
Okay,
just say that like a lot of what, you know, we, especially Bree and BJ, have been, because you are much more steeped in this world than I am, but a lot of what the changes have been thus far have been a sort of slimming down of the lore just to make it
accessible.
Palatable and accessible.
I would say streamlining.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Okay.
Really
yeah.
Streamlining, because this is bigger lore than Game of Thrones, and probably around on par with like Fellowship type. I mean, where like there are 14 books and then 3 or 4 companion books, and it's big.
Well,
yeah.
And the other thing there too
sounds
is
Malazan-ish.
That it hopefully a little bit more digestible than Malazan, unfortunately.
Shots at Malazan.
It's yeah, that first book was rough. But the other thing to point out too is, so what was really neat is with the character building is that Robert Jordan, even characters that you see once for 5 seconds in the book, have pages written about them in Robert Jordan's notes. Like,
that's
we don't
Tolkien.
Necessarily have
yeah,
access to those,
like,
but everybody has like a real well thought out motivations, backstory, all the things. And so there's so much that is in this world that there's just no way
it's
to have it all.
It's got
to
be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So.
Okay.
And so, you know, either this is some of, you're just seeing like a warder on the very edge of the bell curve. Like, I would say Lan is sort of among the best. And so how he interacts with the world is just going to be a little bit different than everybody else. So it could be some of that, and it could be some streamlining. So
we just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. So we get a fairly gross scene of Nynaeve popping the sore and trying to get some pus out of it. I'll just admit this about myself. I don't mind admitting things about myself on the podcast. I like to be honest here. That's so, what is it, satisfying to
cathartic,
me.
Cathartic,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, the pus, like getting the thing out. Like,
yep.
Like if I've got like a something and I'm like popping a bump and I get the, like the pus comes out of it, I feel like a new man. I'm like, my God, I fixed myself.
I think Bree's favorite thing in treating horses is emptying pus-filled sores or whatever and infected hooves and all this gross stuff. And
good, I get it.
Her
I totally get it.
That is very satisfying.
About this was there wasn't enough pus.
Yes.
Quite right.
Agreed.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough pus.
And the color was completely wrong,
yeah.
But you can write that off as it's a
trolloc
poisoned wound,
right?
Anything
could be.
And so
there should have been more, though.
Kind of more serous green liquid,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely not something you would ever get from an infected wound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is the type of content you get here on Mangum Talks.
If you were wondering what differentiates us from other podcasts you consume, here it is.
The detailed, purulent discussion.
Yeah, let somebody else break down the pus color. That's right. So Moraine not looking good here, completely pale, barely breathing. Duncan Cheek, anybody? Anyway, unconscious. Nynaeve then says, now we give it time. So Lan looks at her kind of confused. So here's what I took from that. It seems to me that Lan's used to Moraine's healing, which is like, ta-da! Like, and this is a different type of healing. And he's
mm-hmm.
like, fuck, this is different than I expected. She's not like back with us right away. And there's some uncertainty around it. So
right.
I think it's creating not on solid ground here, Land is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the look I think he shoots Nynaeve. Cuts to Perrin. You have anything?
Yeah, the other thing I would say there is that he doesn't really have any idea of what she might be capable of. Because I think Moraine may have mentioned, so we just don't know if Land knows what Moraine knows. So Moraine knows that Nynaeve can channel. Shit, I hope that's not a spoiler.
No, I know what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
So absolutely, she can.
Yeah.
But we don't know if Lan knows.
They did it together. Remember?
Yeah.
She did it with old girl
with Egwene.
With Egwene. Yeah.
Yeah.
They listened
to
it. I know she can tap into it. I think
because y'all gave me a look that was like, oh,
no. The look we gave you was she knows that he knows that he knows that she. We were doing the mental trying to figure out what you were saying. But I do think I know what you mean.
Lan might not know.
There's some uncertainty from Lan about like. A, can she do this?
Yeah.
And then
right.
B, like, if he does know that she can tap in to this network of power, like, why the hell didn't you just do that?
Right.
So there's probably a couple things. And
then the other thing is, she's never faced a trolloc wound before. So she's probably also uncertain about, is this even going to do anything?
What are we
I don't
doing?
Know.
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And
there's
Jesus
also...
says that. Like,
like,
this isn't reacting like any other poison I've dealt with.
And I don't know if Lan is thinking about this at all, but there is also, as we talked about in the last, I think the last pod, there is the Lan knows too, if Nynaeve tries to tap into it, even if he knows she can, like, that's real dangerous because she doesn't know what she's doing.
Right. And he doesn't know if she has done that before.
Yeah.
Like, if that's...
So there are all kinds of...
Yeah,
things
we're
going
not
on
sure about
with,
what's going on,
yes.
But this is the best option we have right now.
Yes,
stuff some herbs in it and let's see what happens.
Pretty
sounds
much,
good.
Absolutely. Cut to Perrin walking, waking up in a thunderstorm. He is in a house and in a window. Shout out to Sarah, good eye here. In the back, you see some orange yellow eyes. I think we can start to equate this with dreams. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was in a dream anyway, because like, why is he waking up in the house?
There?
But I think if you didn't know that, you could probably tell from the eyes. He's walking around the house asking for Layla. It looks like he's in maybe his own house or something. But it looks like a blacksmith's home because there's
mm-hmm.
a big fire pit there that he could work on. The wind's blowing. He's walking weird again. Hands are down. Wrists near the hips. Very strange look. I don't know why he walks that way.
Maybe he has shoulder problems from being a blacksmith.
Maybe that's in canon. He
mm-hmm.
he's going to a fire, the Smith's fire pit, and we see a wolf eating Layla, and she turns to look at him and whispers, "I know." I don't think you would have catched the "I know" if you were just watching it casually. I watch it on the subtitles, and the subtitles said,
mm-hmm.
Where she said, "I know."
Mm-hmm.
One other thing, did you catch what appeared behind Perrin in a like super brief.
No, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So as he's coming through the doorway, you get a face and the fiery eyes and like a whole body.
Yeah.
Like a cowled mm-hmm. body. So it was outside the window and then behind him as he crossed the threshold.
So like in the house.
Similar to the bat dream that we had in episode 2. So it's mm-hmm. sort of the same looking figure.
Got it. That's a great connection there to make for folks. I know from Layla was weird. I think is that maybe this is guilt or something from him. I'm not quite sure, but that was pretty strange. And it's kind of gross that wolf eating. But again, it goes to what I was talking about, which is these characters think the wolves are not on their side. Mm-hmm. Like he clearly is scared of the wolf, right? Because he's dreaming that the wolf is eating his wife, right?
It is also interesting that like for me that scene is a direct parallel to the Trolloc eating the innards of the other Trolloc. Mm-hmm. Like they are staged the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of innards eating in this episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The intestines look real similar.
He's a real underdog. I don't think anybody would have bet on innard eating.
Yeah.
Innard eating and pus squeezing is what we've got for you.
It's the winners of the episode.
Pretty
right
gross
there.
Episode so far.
I mean, they probably reused those intestines from those scenes.
They're
yeah,
kind
they
of
don't need to
a
do,
little
but...
fake.
Yeah, smash cut to Perrin waking up and Egwene is telling him, look, the wolves are close. We gotta go. So we get a chase scene with them and the wolves. Really cool chase scene.
Mm-hmm.
It does look like they use some real wolves for this. There's some CGI wolves, obviously, in the chase scene, but it does look like they have actually got some wolves that they're working with. I can tell, again, sorry to all the Game of Thrones references, but I just know from Game of Thrones that getting real wolves is super fucking expensive. So they, and a hassle logistically, and like, it's just, it's not easy for them from a production standpoint to do this. So just mad respect for the show for going the extra mile. I liked it. Cut to Mount. And they run. Like, so Perrin and Egwene are running. They get to the edge of a wood. So it's like this, it's kind of not really.
Like a scrublandy wood.
It's not really densely populated
wood.
And there's no leaves on the trees. Mm-hmm. But they get to the edge of that, where the trees are, and the wolves stop back where the trees are. And Egwene asks why they stop. Perrin doesn't know. He just responds that they need to keep moving. Cut to Matt and Rand. Matt, shit, it's cold. Matt asked him to trade coats. Matt is so funny to me. He's cold. His buddy's got a nice coat. Hey, man, you want to trade coats for a while?
Let's take turns.
You want to trade coats for a while?
Yeah.
He seems like the type of friend that you have to be on high alert for a note. Like, you can't just, like, cat. You know, like, a lot of friends you have, they'll ask you things, and your first reaction is like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, you just kind of trust your friend. Can't do that with Matt. You have got to be, when he asks you a question, you have got to think about it. Because he will literally take the coat off your back if he's cold.
I mean, it is a nice coat.
It's a nice coat.
It's a fine leather coat. Like, you know, it would be nice to have
sheepskin.
In the mountains. So
absolutely. And he does look ratty. They've done a good job with that. He does not have great, like, clothes on. Like, he's got...
Matt. He's looking real fresh there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rand then says this quote from him. Think of the stories the kids will read about you one day. Matt Cauthon, the man who once walked while a little chilly. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Matt, you funny now? That's a new wrinkle. And it is for us, too. It's for the viewer.
I mean...
A new one for the book readers, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah,
honestly.
never a hint of humor.
Yeah.
Rand is a funny one.
Never the funny one.
No.
So I'm glad they called that out as a, like, hey,
that's
weird.
A new wrinkle. Maybe he's talking to the book readers.
I
like when they do that. Yeah, they eventually get to a cliff and they look over it and it's a river, but more importantly, a town.
Yeah.
That's right. They have, whatever way they went, good way. Whatever way Egwene and Perrin went, doesn't
not
seem
so
like
much.
A better way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like the, can we at least go downhill and... Then Rand is like, see, we have downhill. And even as a city, like, I brought you to, like, the best option here.
Yeah.
You can stop complaining.
Absolutely. I did a great job here. And then we get some medieval-esque music as they walk up. But as they walk up, when we're getting that sort of medieval music, I'm thinking, like, Renaissance fair. Like, oh, this is going to be nice. Like, someone's going to hand them a turkey leg, and they're going to be...
we're all happy.
No.
Also,
we get a very concerning shot of an individual in a cage. Now... This, I know just from, like, other stories and looking at stuff like this, like, that have, a, like, from that medieval period, that's a torture device,
mm-hmm.
what that person is in. That's not just I killed someone and put them up there. I think what these devices are typically used for is it makes you stand up mm-hmm. for like days on end.
Mm-hmm. And you
literally can't even buckle your knees. Mm-hmm. It is torture that person was in. And then eventually somebody peppered him with arrows at some point. But this person is now dead. That's the best thing. And Matt notices a very bright, shiny, nice stone on the individual. They really focus in on, mm-hmm. on Matt's perspective there. And that's the end of that scene. Anything on Dead Man and the torture device?
It's a pretty rock. Nope. We'll get back to it later.
We sure will.
There are things there.
Yeah. Cuts to the town, and it's busy. People are working, going about their business. Music's a little foreboding, though. We don't get the same. After we see the dead man and the torture device, the music changes a little bit, which I appreciated.
And this is like also a much dirtier, almost more like industrial-y town, as much as anything is here. But
I think
a much dirtier town than... Two Rivers.
Yeah. It's a mining town.
Yes, a mining town.
It seems like it's a pop up.
It's
a pop up, like a food truck that needs a storefront for an afternoon. Pop up
or a medieval Upton Sinclair. Like that's what we're.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know how much you guys looked at this, but the stuff that they were mining wasn't like raw ore, and like to me it looked like what they were getting and picking out, and where the mining town was basically in like a former city. And they're going through ruins. They're mining as well, and they're trying to get stone or whatever it else they do.
Just scavenging, maybe.
But, and I think that they're really playing up this, there are ruins everywhere, because there used to be places like Manetherim, places like Aradol, all these great cities thousands of years ago, and they're sort of living in the ruins of that civilization.
Yep.
Archaeologist.
a certain
opportunist.
Archaeologist, I had not picked up on that. That's really interesting. Yeah.
I agree. Then we hear drink, drink, drink. So it sounds like it seems like all these towns have the biggest building in this town, and all these towns is a bar.
Yeah.
It's and it's this big Oktoberfest looking tent, and that's where they go to
there, I do want to just comment as the horse resident.
Please.
Expert.
Yeah,
is
what horses?
Exactly. So what was very cool is they used mules for these scenes.
Mm.
So all of the pack animals that you saw are all mules, and they actually looked fairly like appropriate for like draft animals.
Oh, cool.
So anyway, I thought that was very cool, although they didn't have any of them brain, which was a little disappointing when the horses are constantly wickering and neighing, and it's like, really, they don't make that much noise.
Are the horses constantly wickering? I think they sputter.
Oh, they're sputtering. In the subtitles, they're sputtering, which is very unfortunate.
Okay. Yeah,
anyway, there are mules.
That is
very cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
So maybe the indication that these are working animals.
Absolutely.
And, they maybe don't have as much money in this town.
No.
So they go to the town tavern where everybody is drinking. The waitress welcomes them and they sit down. She brings them some drinks. Rand immediately says, "We only have enough for food." Matt's like, "Killjoy, what the fuck, man?" She says, "Well, the soup's good." Bet it isn't. Rand asks if anyone has come into the town today. And maybe, I don't know, somebody like a woman with a braid or a big guy. And she tells them, and I think it's interesting here that Rand, when he's like, "Have you seen anybody?" He describes Egwene and Perrin. He doesn't say, "Did you see some sickly, pale-looking woman who's magic with a samurai guy?" He doesn't care about Moraine and Lan. He doesn't even ask about them,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "No, the only person to come through fresh is a gleeman," which is a phrase that maybe people had heard before. I kind of hadn't. I was able to piece together what it is. I guess it's just like a traveling entertainer, somebody who just...
Yep,
like,
you are spot on.
Yeah, it just kind of goes from town to town with a song and a tune and his guitar. So the guy comes out, tunes his guitar up. I like that. Tuned his guitar. You got to do that. Especially, in that altitude. You're going to get off with the strings a little bit. He tunes his guitar. He starts to play and sing. What do we think about this guy singing? I'm going to say little Scott Stappish from Creed. Little Nickelback.
Sure.
A little alt 90s tone to this character.
I would say maybe even a little older. Maybe a little Johnny Cash vibes, sort of that really raw voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're leaning into that.
Okay. I'll just do a couple lines from the song. The colors of his morning, the darkness of his night, little grave that gave no warning, a sun that brought no light. He saw his whole world breaking, the tortured soul I met, in a prison of his making, the man who can't forget. And then we get more, but that's basically the crux of the song.
Yep.
In the prison of his making, the man who can't forget. And he gets up and he leaves. Good song. little short, but good song.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is, you know, keep them interested and get as much money as you can between songs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He goes short with it so that he mm-hmm. can get up and collect the tips. The waitress, she's been here, done this before. She goes, are we all going to cry or do we want another round? Ah! Everybody cheers. Guy walks around. He's getting tips from folks, but he does run into and very specifically touches one man. One man is like walking and he kind of positions and jockeys himself in front of him and like touches him. Like, oh, sorry about that, man. Like, and they're doing way more touching than he does with anybody else. Just important. Gleeman sits down and the waitress, I'm going to call him Gleeman until we get his name.
Yep.
The Gleeman sits down and the waitress comes up and asks for a donation for the Gleeman. You got it. Guys, come on. Like, mm-hmm. shit ain't free, all right? And Rand gives it, but as Matt looks through his money sack, the Gleeman holds it up. He says, you can't trust anyone around here, and motions to the guy that he had just touched. Yeah. So I think the inference here is that the guy he touched, pickpocketed Matt, and the Gleeman caught it. Which is impressive. We should be mm-hmm. impressed by that. And then was able to pickpocket it back. I'm going to call a reverse pickpocket situation.
Yep, the reverse card.
So that guy did bump into Matt just before.
Okay, well, I didn't catch that. I mean, they showed it. That's great. But you also could have inferred it, right?
Right.
Absolutely. The way that they shot it and the way he's very clearly motions like, you can't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. This guy over here. Right? So... Matt goes to take his sack back and whoop, Gleeman, like you do the handshake and then the whoop right up in the air, mm-hmm. in the air with the fake handshake. Kind of what he does with the sack. He's like, nope, not going to give it to you. This is a donation for the Gleeman and a small fee for the life lesson. And Rand says, bloody expensive lesson, Gleeman, the best ones are.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I got good vibes from this guy right away. I don't know, we'll talk more about him, but like mm-hmm. when he first popped on screen, I thought, I like the cut of his jib. Not with the singing. The singing was, but when he sat down with them and started talking, I got a good vibe from the guy.
Yeah.
They sit back down, cut to the howling plain, and we hear wolves howling in the background. Perrin and Nguyen are walking. Nguyen comments that they're still here, basically, the wolves. They're still around. They see fresh tracks that are deep. Now, these are not wolf tracks. This is some sort of like wagon.
Yep.
Something that they look at the depth of the track. Because Perrin, obviously, smart guy. They look at the depth of the track and go, like, well, that's got to be carrying a lot of people. Like, that was a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Wherever this is going. And it seems to be heading toward the White Tower. I don't know how they know that, but that's what they say.
It's going east.
Yeah, so they're looking to the east, and that seems to be where it's going. And also, like, it looks fresh. I assume that, you know, there's a lot of freshly disturbed ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Egwene says it's like the wolves are leading. She said, it's almost like the wolves led us here.
Mm-hmm.
See? Started to pick it out. The wolves are not just mindlessly bad people, I'm telling you. Perrin says that they should hang back until they know more, and they keep walking. Cut back to the bar. Good time is being had by all. And Matt asks if they have enough money to pay for tonight. Rand, I have, but you got robbed.
Sucker.
And yet again, Rand being funny. Yeah. It's interesting where they're going with that character. Rand tells him to get up so we can see if the barmaid has a room for him. Cut to them. They just walk in the back of this place. Pretty astonishing.
I mean, there doesn't seem to be a lot of security or, you know, we're not worried about health violations out here,
no OSHA, no, none of that. So they go right to the barmaid, and she just goes, all right, with it, get out with it. I can tell when a lad wants something. So right away, sassy barmaid. Matt says that they throw themselves at the feet of her mercy if she would just, you know, give them a room or something. And she's like, well, go ahead. Get down there. And he's like,
check out the floor.
Didn't quite mean that. No, so Rand steps in. Says, all right, that didn't work. Let me try this. How about this? We're looking for somewhere to stay cheap. We'll work to pay it off if that's possible. She says, look, Phil, save your money. I do have a job for you. And she takes Rand out back to start splitting wood. And Rand seems to happily take the axe. He's like, I can do this. I fucking grew up on a mountain farm. Let's do this.
I wanted to point out like a really funny little tiny spot where Rand notices that the barmaid is chucking just all of the things that are coming right back into the soup and like some beers from patrons and all going in there. And he's just like, I ate that.
From the earlier line where, you know, we thought
soup's good.
Soup's good. And now it's just like,
I thought it was particularly funny that before she poured the two steins of beer in there. She did sniff them to make sure they were beer, I think, was
not
the
hopefully. Yes. Not urine.
Yes.
And then she did cut up a pig's foot and put that in there too. Yeah. But I mean, pig's feet can be a delicacy. That's not necessarily a problem.
Yes. Yeah. I just get the feeling that everybody's unfinished plates also.
It's a bowl of brown. Oh, yeah. It's a bowl of brown. There's been meat in there for decades.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Matt's watching the waitress, and Rand comments that she's a little young for you. Moraine is more your style. So there we go. We got a little insight into Matt's romantic history. He seems to like older women. Rand says they can alternate. And Matt's like, you think she's up for that? And he's like, dude, the wood. I'm talking about China. Gross. God, man. Head out of the gutter. Matt doesn't seem super interested in this chore. Does not make a move for the axe, nor wood, I can say. Matt then comments that...
That's a through line. Matt's not really interested in chores.
Yeah, Matt then comments that Rand is the reason why we're in... Look, you're the reason why we're in this shit town to begin with. Rand asks, what's your deal? And Matt kind of snaps at him and says, look, do you really believe all this shit? Aes Sedai, White Tower, one of us being the dragon reborn. It's a bloody joke, the worst kind. One that has gone on way too long. He then speculates that Egwene and Perrin probably aren't even going to the White Tower. They're probably dead. Rand's like, whoa, bro, you don't believe that?
Chill out.
Matt's like, even if they are, you don't need to go there for her. She wouldn't do it for you.
Dagger to the heart. Mm-hmm. Oof.
I mean...
Rand calls him a prick, tells him to leave, so Matt does.
We already kind of had that conversation, and Egwene thinks that about him. So, I mean, they're clearly already on the outs, and I think appropriately reading each other.
I don't think this is out of line from Matt. I mean, everything we've seen is that, like, Egwene does choose her own personal interest over Rand. She seems 100%. To do that all the time. If I was Matt, I'd probably be pointing that out, too. I'd be like, well, don't upend your whole life
for this chick.
For this chick who's, like,
care.
Literally the first time she got another option other than you, she took it.
Yeah.
Like, literally the first time.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. But Rand clearly didn't appreciate it. So they're a little fussy. Matt walks in and the waitress asks, you finished already? He's like, that work is not really for me. She asks him what he can do, and he says, well, back home I was pretty well off horse trader. Hey, everybody! Oh, thank goodness you're here. Everybody, I've got a horse trader with no horses here. Does anyone need a horse trader for no horses? Just completely blows his spot up. Very funny. She tells him no one cares about anything other than when the next beer is coming. So serve beer or chop wood. Matt, I'm usually the one drinking, but she hands him some drinks and he starts to pass them out. I think this is a good chore for Matt.
Yes, this seems right on his level.
Absolutely. Waiter is pretty good.
Extrovert, kind of personable. He trades some banter with the patrons as he starts serving drinks. So
he's a barmaid with stubble.
Yeah, absolutely. He says something about, like, my razor was blunted, shaving your wife's back or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what he said. Yeah, it was pretty good. She was impressed by his little witty banter there, and he did get tipped. And she asked him if he's saving up for anything, and he says, I'm just trying to get home. And she's like, where's that? And Matt says, well, the two of us are from Barillon.
Yeah. That's a call to the book.
Is that a lie?
Yes.
Yeah, he's lying about where he's from.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you can see he starts with the two rivers, and then he's like, the two of us are from.
Barillon. Okay, yeah. Back west. You don't know the quickest way to get back, do you? She says, well, it's by riverboat, but you're going to need more money. He's like, well, how much? And she's like, a fucking lot. And he's like, well, I only need one ticket. So that was important, that he's already now planning to leave Rand and split up even further. She says, it's a shame he's going home, quote, where we're born in this dirt. We spend our whole lives digging in it until one day they cover us up with a few shovelfuls of the same stuff. All these bastards know everything about me. The ones that have stuck around have known me since I was a girl. So basically, she's kind of sharing towny life and this idea of, like, man, it'd be nice to go somewhere else. You are somewhere else, man.
I also read that as a little bit, it'd be nice to interact. We'll see how far that goes with somebody that's not from the town and didn't grow up with me.
Yeah, absolutely. She's prowling here, it seems.
Multiple times. But I do also, like, I really like this interaction, and, you know, we'll talk about what is actually going on with this character later, but, like, I, throughout this episode, I, like, deeply empathize with her. I get where she's coming from, and I kind of get what has led her decision-making where she ends up. Yeah, I think they did a really good job with this character. I also love the way the actress plays this character.
Yes. I was going to say a little disappointed.
You identify with her? Jesus Christ. Sarah, fan of the Dark One.
I was unhappy that we only get it, that she's killed off so quickly, and really liked how this actress did in this role.
I thought she was great, yeah. Yeah, she had the way she carried herself was really good, apart from anything else.
She pontificates about how nice it would be to be somewhere new. Matt says, well, I'm going to get back somewhat I'm going to get back some kind of way here. I'm going to beg, borrow, steal. She says, you might want to think about the last one, unless you end up in a cage. So referencing the fellow that they saw on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
Cut back to the forest, and we see Moraine still asleep, still not looking great. Nynaeve is telling Land that the poison was nothing like she's ever seen before. She says, I worry, ... Land cuts her off and says, I'll be back. She sort of panics. What happened to watching my every move? She is so funny, right? Like, she can't even say, like, whoa, man, I don't really want to separate out here in these woods. Instead, she's got to, like, be super aggressive and be like, well, why are you being
fucking... I'm like, killer.
Yeah, why are you, like, talking out of both sides of your mouth, dude? Like, why are you... Like, she can't fucking, like, just ask a, like, normal question of this guy. But anyway, Lan takes off. He tells her she'll keep Moraine safe, and he needs to go. Nynaeve, don't be so sure. Lan takes off. Cut back to Perrin and Egwene. They are walking in the tracks they found. So they're just following these tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Perrin tells her to let him go first. He'll come back if it's safe. Right? Look at that. Chivalry not dead, folks. Shipping. I'm shipping. He pushes her to do that. And she said, look, Perrin, don't do that. You don't have to protect me, all right? It's not your fault what happened. Perrin says it is. I think we all know what Perrin is talking about.
Yeah.
Egwene's talking about something different. She hugs him and says, it's not your fault. Perrin seems really distressed during this conversation. I think the weight of the trauma of killing his wife is on him.
As Nerit stares, he's like looking out like above her
right.
head.
Pretty
yeah.
tough. And you know, Egwene, because she's developing serious romantic feelings for Perrin, obviously, comes in for the hug. Yeah, so it's very important. She tells him they need to go and they keep walking. They eventually get to a forest. They hear crackling. They turn around. They see a group of people. Egwene yells, what do you want? A lady in the group says, do you know the song? She repeats herself multiple times as they walk toward them. Egwene holds out a knife and questions her. One of the guys says, look, they don't know it or they'd already sung it already. Then he says, your welcome warms our spirit as your fires warm the flesh, but we do not know the song. That's the important bit. Go on, say it. Egwene says it. Perrin repeats it. The lady says, then we seek still as it was, so it shall be. If we but remember, seek and find. I'm Isla. This is Rain. You both look awful. Sarah, you dressed as these folks. Do you want to talk about who they are? These gypsy adjacent characters that have been introduced?
I can talk a little bit about them because we do meet them in the first book. So I do know a little bit mm-hmm. about them. And I think that this is one of the points I want to bring up specifically on our second half of this podcast. But they are traveling people. And please, Bree and BJ, jump in with any extra knowledge you think is helpful here, but they are traveling people and they are, their life's mission is to be on this quest for the song that they, like, would you call it the story of the world, the prime mover of the world? Like what?
It's actually not clear what song they're actually looking uh-huh. for.
I mean, you get hints of it in the book, what song it is.
Yeah.
But
no, it's not
yeah.
new here, which is what I want to talk about
the
second part, but I think it's not like spoilery to say that. Like, we have this one song reference that does not get referenced again, really.
They know many, many songs, but they do not know the song.
Right.
The song, yeah.
I think they did capitalize song in the subtitles, and I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
That is appropriate.
Like, this is sort of like almost, I think you're supposed to interpret this as a religious greeting, basically.
Which it kind of...
Or at least just a very stereotype.
I would call it a ritual. Religion has a little bit of codification to it that I don't think necessarily applies here, but it is certainly a ritual greeting.
Yes.
I think they're gypsy adjacent people that we've been introduced to. They're travelers. They look sort of scrangly, but they are, nicer than maybe the reputation.
They're very
I would also say that maybe look a little scraggly, especially when they're just standing there. But when we get back to their camp, like, they have potted plants out and rugs on the ground. So I think they've got it a little more together than...
Little nomad land.
Mm-hmm.
Nomad
land. Like, I think they have a system.
They're not just wandering. They know how to work that Winnebago.
So did this tick the they're not as clean as...
I believe this from them because they have like a specific way of life that they are
and
living.
And they look
that
like
includes,
they live
it. Yeah, that this is how they live, whereas our plucky gang of people are just running.
Villagers.
And should, although I will say that they are right. Perrin and Egwene look awful and that was appropriate. It's everybody else who has stayed cleaner than they should.
Right, and so I think like... both the Tuathon, the Tinkers look kind of dusty. They don't like look dirty, but
yes.
they look like they've been traveling, but they're still put together, whereas Egwene and Perrin look
bedraggled.
This is just gypsy. Everything you're describing is exactly like it's perfect. Like there you go. Okay, anyway. Or at least like that sort of trope that we get in
right.
a lot of
yeah.
media
yeah.
of those types of band of travelers, right?
Yeah.
Cut to Egwene and Rand. Egwene and Perrin arriving at the camp. Egwene is arm in arm with them as they walk. Just want to point that out. They're covered with a blanket. They're put toward a fire. They're given food. Egwene asks who they are. Come on now. Our reputation precedes us wherever we go. The guy in the group responds, "And ill-earned. It's ill-earned, that reputation. We are the Tuathon."
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are. Is that about
That's
right?
That's what they call themselves. Yeah.
Tuathon.
What?
Tuathon.
Tuathon? Anyway, Tuathon, the traveling people. Aram is one of the guys there. He makes a joke. The people who steal your gold and your children. I don't think that's true, but that was pretty funny. He asked if they've heard of the Tinkers. So I guess that's another name for them.
It is.
Tinkers?
Yes. And that's what most people just kind of out in the world know them as Tinkers.
Right. And so Tinkers is a little bit, it's sort of genocide and not genocide, sort of depending on how you're referring to them. But this does feed into the trope of, like, they repair pots and stuff like that. Very, like, similar gypsy vibe that you're getting.
Yeah.
And
as far as stealing children, I think it's not unreasonable to say they have a certain way of living. And so if they are near a village and the young people of that village, like, really get invested in the way that these people are living and believe sort of their system, then they could leave with the Tinkers when the Tinkers leave the village.
Imagine, like, hippies following a band.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, an older teenager is kind of like, hey, that looks awesome. Like,
bye.
I'm going to, like...
I'm going to go hang with the Deadheads for a while. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll probably get a little bit more Philly in it because they'll probably
right.
be along with these people for a little
bit
longer.
Because there's a whole sort of, like I said, belief system that these people have.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the lady tells them that their flyers are open to all as long as they need them. Aram and you two look like you need them. Cut back to Mr. Testosterone, Rand. He's just getting a nice upper body workout in, splitting that wood. The waitress tells him, look, that's enough. We got enough wood probably for the next year. Matt asks if they can stay. Rand asks if they can stay out there a bit, but she says, I'll do you one better. She tells him that they've earned a real bed, real place to stay inside.
So I will say that this is a significant departure from the books and has made probably about half the people watching really sad, because in the books, there's a scene that's almost exactly like this where Rand does this shirtless. And I'm sure...
Very disappointing.
Actually, I went the other way on this because I was like, I expected we were going to get the obligatory shirtless because he's...
I mean, but
and you, I was
you're
like,
more a fan of Tom Berlin. So let's...
That's true.
You go older, just like Matt goes older.
I understand Matt in this situation.
Yeah, you're not going to want that kid with his shirt.
No, he's like 12.
No.
I don't need him shirtless
he's,
in this
yeah,
scene.
He's like adorable,
he's
not
totally,
sexy.
Totally yeah. like 23, 4. But yeah, okay, good. Yeah.
Might as well be 12.
Doesn't want that shirt off with that guy. But I mean, I think the point's still there, right? That he's like clearly like being manly.
Yes,
out there, right?
yes.
The waitress kind of
yes.
calls him on it and is like, that's enough, dude. But she takes him inside. And when they get there, she starts asking him questions, sort of insinuating that he and Matt are in a relationship. Rand sort of laughs that off and corrects her. He says, if I wanted a man, I could do better than Matt, basically. A couple things there. One is, it's interesting that in this world, I guess, there is open homosexuality, because she just openly assumed that. She didn't even feel uncomfortable basically asking him.
Yeah.
Through her insinuating
right.
questions, she was kind of asking him. And you can tell from Matt's reaction, it's not anything to be offended about, right? Because Matt was just kind of like, eh, it's just not for
Rand.
Me, but,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I think the introduction there is that there's homosexuality in this world, and it doesn't seem, at least right now, that people are, like, super weird about it. Rand says, as she's about to leave, she gives him two beers, and she goes to leave, and he says, why don't you just drink Matt's? He's buggered off somewhere. So hang out here and drink this. Unless you don't drink on the job. And she's like, totally drink on the job. Like 98% of waitresses
yes.
all over the planet. Cut to Lan riding through the woods. Beautiful early morning shot. Then we see Lan ride his horse right up to the cliff. No, sir. Not for me. Nope. If you follow any of my podcasts, you know I am not a fan of heights. And he gets way too close to that. Why does he get to
it that close.
It was just there for the pretty shot, because that's just sort of very silly, because also I feel like
the horse wouldn't do
those
horse
are sort of
real dumb, and they
no
they
the horse would 100% do it if it's a well-trained horse, but the rocks that they're on, like the shale, like I could see that slipping, and like there goes Mandar. Bye.
All kinds of problems.
But he's scouting.
One less Frisian.
He's clearly scouting. Cut back to Nynaeve, who is tending to Moraine's wound. She seems to be starting to wake up. Moraine's got a little signs of life here. She's whispering something. Leanne comes back, says what they found. They found what they're looking for, and ask if she can ride. Nynaeve says the poultries?
Poultice.
Will give her energy for a few hours, but after that, So in essence, what she's saying is like, I kind of patched her up a little bit here, but I'm not sure if she's really fixed or not. Then we see Moraine's eyes open, and we cut scenes. Now to Matt, who's walking up to the person who was killed in the cage, that standing torture device thing that I talked about before that seems to be on the like outskirts of town. Matt takes out a knife, and we hear, "What are you doing, boy?" It's the Gleeman. Matt takes out his knife, points it at him. Matt says, "I could ask the same of you, Gleeman." Gleeman says, "Well, if you mess with that, if you do anything with that knife, you're going to be like lights out before you even hurt me, basically." In essence, what he's saying is, I'm laying in this situation, okay? I can handle your business right now. And Matt, I've survived Trollocs. I've not survived Trollocs to die at the hands of a singer. Interesting, he kind of threw that out. Do you think that was kind of like a fought bigger men before sort of thing? Like kind of like a macho, like, I've fought Trollocs, dude. You don't want to play with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is. There's a lot that was in the books about these boys that I don't know if they're trying to hint at with some of the conversations that they have in terms of like how comfortable they are with weapons, or at least like maybe knives and, you know, basic things that they would have in town. But this does kind of seem like a boast with what we've seen in the show. So I don't know if they're trying to like bring that in, or like they could go either way. Again, this is sort of one of those things that there's a lot of stuff that's streamlined.
So the other thing that I would say about this too is it seems like Matt's just thrown out this like, well, I've messed with Trollocs. And in the books there is some, you know, commentary, or the boys learn that they shouldn't just say things. Like they need to learn to lie and not say, oh, I know what a Trolloc is, because to everybody else, like if you know what a Trolloc is, you're probably a dark friend. Like you're somebody bad.
That was my thought, is like, that might not be a thing you
yeah.
lead with. Like,
yeah.
hey, man,
and
I
so
know
I think it's interesting that he just tossed that out there, because that's a very, like, consistent with the books. Like,
and we do get that this reaction from Tom that I think you're going to say right now.
Yeah, he says, well, first off, dude, I'm not here for you. I'm here to bury the dead guy. But what kind of farm boy from Two Rivers has met a truck? Now, that's like, who says I'm from Two Rivers? He's been lying. He's not told anybody he's from Two Rivers. Gleeman says, it's written all over you. Your speech, your dress, your asinine attitude, stubbornness, mule. Pretty funny. Gleeman tells Matt to help him get the dead guy down. Matt asks what he did, and then the Gleeman starts to explain the story. He says, this isn't justice. I heard them in town bragging about killing an Aiel. Aiel?
Aiel.
Aiel? Aiel? It's A-I-E-L. Aiel, I'm going to say. Matt, he's an Aiel, and Gleeman, am I saying it wrong? Aiel?
We've been saying it wrong for 20 years, so...
Aiel is...
Yeah,
I think
Aiel?
Aiel is how they're doing it in the show.
All right, let's try to stay consistent with that then. He says, Matt, he's an Aiel. Gleeman, aren't many things outside of accent and dress that will tell you where a person's from. That was a pretty astute thing to say. But it's rare to see that color of hair outside the Aiel waist. Got red hair. So there we go. We're starting to get some backstory and lore in this canon, which is, you got red hair, you're probably an Aiel. Gleeman says he knows they're fighters. Matt says, okay, Aiel, and then he immediately reacts and says, well, I heard they're as bad as Trollocs. And Gleeman says, well, I know you've probably heard that. They're fighters, but they're honor-bound fighters. He makes the point that it's only when they're veiled that you should worry. Again, I love how they're peppering in all this stuff. Now, the casual's not going to remember all this stuff, but they are giving us some stuff that I'm sure we're going to need to know later, which is, you know, basically these Aiels, they are fighters, but only when they're veiled you need to worry. If they're unveiled, you're probably okay. That's, he talks about when they're veiled, that's when you're as good as dead, basically. Now, he was no threat. He was murdered by cowards who feared something they didn't understand. So in essence, what seems to have happened here is this Aiel who was unveiled, so not a threat, not there to fight, the reputation of the Aiel sort of preceded them, and the people of the town freaked out and killed him. That's what I'm picking up. Lehman asks him again, dude, I'm going to ask you one more time. What are you doing here? Matt finally drops the pretense. I need money to get home. Thought he might have some. Not like he's going to need it. I thought there's no... I was sure that the Gleeman was going to be like... He's there to bury him, right?
Yeah.
Like, he obviously respects the dead. I thought there was no way he was going to let Matt do this. And he just goes, we've all had desperate moments. Tell me when you're finished. Then he walks away to let Matt rob the body.
I mean, I kind of like that they're going this way with Tom Maryland because it's very... He's super practical. Like, super, super practical. And he's like, I get it. And... Like, you're clearly needing help in this world, and I'm not gonna, like, just bail you out of every situation. So, like, I get it.
Okay.
I also thought, I really liked this moment, and BJ, I thought in addition to that, what it really did for me, especially the way this actor portrayed this line, delivered this line, is that it tells me a lot about Tom Maryland's backstory, too. And about, like, where he has come from. And because I believed in that moment that he has been in that desperate situation.
He's
before.
Hit
like
rock
that,
bottom.
That is from personal experience, not just something you say.
Probably. Yeah, I take that too. Matt goes to the body. He takes this stone that we saw before. The stone is kind of, it looks like almost like quartz or something. It's like white on the outside, but there's a purple center to
like
it.
Like an amethyst, mm-hmm. maybe, yeah. or yeah. something like that. Yeah.
Then he... tells the body, which I thought was pretty interesting, I've got sisters I need to take care of. So I think he's feeling a little guilt of robbing the dead.
A little bit.
He does have one other thing, which won't mean anything to you, and is just a call out to people that have read the books, mm-hmm. which is a little stone figurine of a dog. And that's past where Sarah's read, I think. So,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a little call out, something that it might be worth, you know, you don't have a wall like Spencer with, you know, all the red lines connecting all of the things that you need to, you know, pay attention to later. But if you remember probably like a couple seasons down the road, you'll be like, oh, that's cute that they put that in there.
Figurine of a dog.
Yep.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. Matt announces he's done. Then the Gleeman says, if you're going to take from the dead, at least you can do is bury him. So he's like, I'll let you do this, but now you're going to help me bury mm-hmm. this guy. Cut to the waitress named Dana. We get the name in the scene. She's asking Rand if he's from Barilon as well. And Rand's like, well, why would you say that? She said, well, Matt said you're from Barilon. And Rand's like, oh, yeah, I'm from Barilon. Yeah, yeah, totally. Barilon,
so adorably
Barilon.
Stupid.
That's me. She's like, well, why'd you leave? And he says, well, we needed to get away. She asks if they're in trouble. She asks again where he's going. And he says, east. She says, well, maybe I can help you, Dana. And here I am, just hearing what I want to be seen. Rand, seen what? Dana, Stone of Tears, the Lion Throne of Camelin,
mm-hmm.
an Ogier Steading,
yep.
maybe even a Trolloc. So I'm guessing this is just tick through a shit from the books. And what she's saying is, I'm listening to your stories, and I just want to hear that you have gone and saw cool things that I wish I could go do, in essence, is what she's saying to this guy. We're going to ask her, why don't you leave? Like, why, if you're... you know, this hard up for a road trip, why don't you just go? And she says, well, the wheel hasn't given me many choices, and the ones I've made have left me here. Rand says he never gave much thought to the wheel before this. He's tried to do what's right. Now, I don't know. I don't know what's right. I don't know what to do. I don't know shit, really. Join the club, Rand.
She's a little bit more introspective in this version than in the book. That he's like, okay, yeah, I don't really know anything.
Comes to this much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She leans in to kiss him, and he backs away immediately and starts to apologize. I'm just going to say this. Completely, completely unrealistic. Absolutely, this guy. Like, come on. First off, he's not really in a relationship with Gwen. Not
nope.
really. And
well, he is,
maybe
but she
really
is.
Maybe like that. Like, I don't know.
No. How old? This guy's maybe 20 years old.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
that's what
yeah,
they
yeah.
said.
Yeah.
That's with the age thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'd have taken a run at this waitress
oh,
all day, every day.
Yes.
I hung out with a lot of 20-year-olds in my day, I'll tell you. Taking a run at this waitress and never told anybody about it. So that is unrealistic.
So,
yes.
yeah.